So Stephen Long is a homeless man that lives near Seattle, Washington, and he lives in his truck. He's lived in that truck for several years because, well, as you all know, house payments, whether it be a rent or a mortgage, it's expensive. Well, the law states that the vehicle cannot be parked in one spot on city streets for more than 72 hours. Well, Mr. Long was cited a number of times and warned that he could possibly be towed. Well, what happens next is his truck was towed, and he sued the city. Well, again, what happens next may be a shock to some of you. Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Life, Liberty, the Pursuit of Pleasure. It's Malcolm Out Loud here, living in your truck, living in your car, homelessness. Where are we at? You know, you hear all kinds of stories today of homelessness. It's a massive problem, people. Massive problem. All over the world. Everywhere. Well, some places have a little bit more. In this particular case, this man that was living in his truck, the problem is, what about people who are living in homes and then you have trucks and cars? Is that going to be the new place that's a vehicle? You know, if you have to live somewhere and you have to live inside your vehicle, is that permissible? And what about the people who live in the houses? Is that fair to them? Or should there be maybe a place or a destination where you can go with that house or truck and live in there if you need be? And then, of course, what do you do with the bathroom and the shower and the basic necessities in life? And my friends, it gets real complicated after that, as you can see immediately here. Our co-host today taking this on, Linda Martinelli. Linda is an entrepreneur, owner, and president of Proforma Graphic Print Source, and she wrote a whole column and an article, a story about this right at America Out Loud, friends, and you'll find it there, and it's entitled Coming Soon to Your Neighborhood. And Sergeant Betsy Smith is here. She's a police officer for 29 years, a law enforcement trainer for over 20 of those years. And she has, I'm sure, in her profession, had to deal with homeless people more than once. And I'm sure she'll know something about that as well. Jennifer Breeden, she's the president of Breeden Law International, focusing on legal consulting, international policies, special focus on human rights in the Middle East as well. All right, so Linda, let's take a look at this article here. And so the big beef of this is that, if I understand this right, now, the guy, there's a law there that kind of talks against this, but, and this guy sued his truck was towed, and he sued the city, and do I understand he won?
He won. The city, well, Judge Schaefer, gave him back the fees that he was cited with. So his tickets were reimbursed if he had even paid most of them. But also the tow fee was, you know, they had to return his truck to him. Now the truck was not in working order, so they had to tow it back and give him his truck back. And just as an aside, since that time, he's now in a different truck, but he's still living on the streets. Somebody gave him or loaned him a truck that works so that he can move it from time to time. The big point about this article and the thing that really upset me about this case is that Judge Schaefer called in the homesteading law, and she decided that by using this 1880s frontier era law, which was really meant to save people from losing their homes at that time, in a time long ago and different than now, had nothing to do with living in your truck or a box or anything else. She used that law to say that he lived in his truck, so he was homesteaded. And the repercussions of that and the consequences that can happen from that are just humongous. And we all need to think about, if you are now in your car and you live in your car and you're homesteaded, the police can no longer touch you on the street. So you can park in front of anybody's home and they can't cite you and they can't tow you. And let's just take that to some more levels, which really makes sense. So homeless people live in pup tents. So why would your pup tent not be homesteaded if your car is homesteaded? Why would the box you live in not be homesteaded? And now you have people living anywhere they want. So just think about, and this is happening today. So this is not something that's futuristic. It's happening today. People are living in front of other people's homes that they've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for, that they've worked for, that they have a place to raise their family. And now these people are living in front of their houses or in their neighborhoods or at their parks or in parking lots where their children have to walk by. And they have nowhere to use restrooms. They have nowhere to throw their trash. They're using drugs. They're urinating on the buildings. And this judge made this determination about homesteading that is just going to affect everything. And California jumped on this immediately. And they actually have a proposed law that they are working on now to do the same thing in California. The entire way that this can go is could affect so many people in the country that I just think that this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when you talk about, you know, peeing on the buildings and urinating here and drugs over there and this and that, I was going to say, sounds like just another Friday night in my neighborhood. so, not really.
Let me go there.
Not really. But, all right, so I got a couple questions for you, Miss Linda, mm-hmm. okay? Number one, there's Stephen Long, the homeless man. Does he have another place to live, do you know? Do you know anything about this?
He had a place to live. And by the way, he has a job. He works at the stadium there. And I guess that he does maintenance work. It's not a full-time job. It's a part-time job. There's nothing that I've read that says that he can't have a full-time job. He just chooses to live this way. And what he has said is that he doesn't want to pay rent anymore, that mm-hmm, he's mm-hmm. happy living in his truck mm-hmm. and not paying the rent. So that's what he wants to continue to do. So this is not a person that has to do this because they absolutely can't work, are disabled, are mentally ill, any of those things. He chooses to live this way.
Well, I mean, okay, I hear you, but I think you've made some assumptions here. I don't think you really know that. Let me be honest with you. When you say what you just said, you don't really mm-hmm. know. I mean, unless you've talked to him or you've seen some evidence of that, you don't really know. I mean, there could be other problems the man is having, or there could maybe he couldn't get a full-time thing. I mean, let's be real here. I mean, do you really know that, or am I...
Well, this is what I've read by his own words.
I see.
So you've seen that in writing.
You've seen that said somewhere then.
Yes, he said that he did not want to pay rent again.
Well, I can see, but that doesn't. Okay, depends how you take that again at all here. All right, so there's some interesting thoughts on this one. Betsy, let's go around here a minute here. Now, you, in your years of a law enforcement officer, I am absolutely positive that you have had to interact with homeless people more than once. And give us some perspective on what we're dealing with here, Betsy, will you, when you're interacting with somebody who is in that position. I'm wondering, Betsy, do we take an awful lot for granted that we think we do know? I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I get the feeling many of us think we know what their experience and what they've been through. Do we really know that, Betsy?
Well, here's the thing, and you just brought up an excellent point, Malcolm, where, you know, you're asking, okay, does this, because most of us look at a situation like this guy that Linda's talking about, you know, really, would he really choose not to work full time? Would he really choose to be semi-homeless and live in his truck? And the answer is resoundingly, in my 30 some years in law enforcement, yes. We like to think, oh, these poor people, they're homeless because of some terrible things. No, many homeless people choose.
So you're thinking it's a choice. You're believing this is probably a choice he's making. I see. Which is where Linda's coming from.
Yes, okay. And I've read some of the same things that Linda's read. And absolutely. And we, you know, for example, what's been in the news lately, in addition to this, is the homeless mansion in Seattle, where all these homeless people, you know, put together pallets and tents and old chairs. And now in a huge tourist area of Seattle, there's this huge homeless encampment. We've got the same thing in LA. We have the same thing in Portland. And these people are coming to these areas because, and again, you can read all this online. We like the liberal vibe of the Seattle homeless mansion, this one couple from the East said. And these people choose this lifestyle because, why? Because we've allowed it. The Seattle Fire Department got called on Monday because they thought the homeless encampment was on fire. No, it was just a cook stove cooking shrimp and steaks. Huh. I didn't have shrimp and steak for dinner on Monday. I don't know if you guys didn't, but I have a budget. I have a grocery budget.
That's so funny.
We're allowing this to occur.
Ladies, I can see Jennifer. I mean, it would be quite a photograph. Let's face it. Think about that, Jennifer. There's something kind of very interesting about that. Very chic, you know, homeless tents and people are out, you know, in worst kind of a situation, and they have a campfire going. And to Betsy's point, they got, you know, steaks, all kinds of really nice steaks and shrimp, and they've got some, you know, china, some sort of nice settings out there on some wooden crates, and they got some champagne glasses. And, you know, think about, I mean, that's kind of a really, I can visualize this in my mind. And they're sitting, and they're going to have like a night on the town. And they got, you know, it's like, okay, here we are. We got, you know, anyways, I don't know why my mind goes there, but I find that very fascinating, Miss Jennifer.
Is.
Yeah, talk to me.
It is, you know, and this is such an interesting topic. So I bring it back to the analogy of parents of kids that have drug issues, younger kids, teenagers, maybe even young adults with drug issues and their families. There's two types of parents, right? There's the parent who, you know, they know their kid has a drug issue and they say, look, we're not going to support this anymore. We're not going to do this. We're sorry to do this, but we're going to have to kick you out of our house. You can't use our electricity. You can't use any of this stuff. We know you're young. You don't get how the world works. You need to learn how to live on your own, how to get a job. We're not going to let you take our money and live under our roof. If you're going to do this, they kick them out. It's really hard for the parents. They have to kind of let them go until they come to their senses or get their life together. And then there's a second type of parent. And that's the type that, you know, is so sad about it. They call other parents. They go to their church. They seek counseling. Oh, my child is a drug addict. But their child comes home every night, sleeps under a roof, has a nice warm bed, has steak and shrimp maybe, and can steal from their wallet, their purse, which is what they usually end up doing, and get the money for the drugs. That's called enabling. And I think it's the same thing with governments, with state governments, with local governments, who for homeless laws allow people to live there. They bring them nice food. They use taxpayer dollars to provide these people with whatever they need because, oh, there's such this problem. Now, to Betsy and to Linda's point, you know, and I'm going to caveat this with saying, I do believe there are some people who become homeless for a time and who truly are the people in need of help, maybe families who get kicked out of their house or something like that. And people who really can't, and they want to work, they want to find a job and they seek jobs. Those people, I believe, are, and in my experience, are not homeless for very long. They can always find a way. But in my experience, and I can even just give you a firsthand story of my friend Eric, or my old friend Eric, my old homeless friend here. I was managing a Starbucks in downtown Atlanta, and Eric would come in every morning and we would have the leftover Starbucks food, and I always gave it to him. And one day I just wanted to learn his story and learned a little bit about his story. He said his family lived in Tennessee. He was in Atlanta on the streets, couldn't find a home. Well, I do all this research and I find out that there's a place called the Atlanta Mission. In fact, Mission is it's a nonprofit organization. It's in every major city in the United States with a very large homeless population. And it is absolutely free to go there. They not only put a roof on your head, they clothe you, they give you food, and they give you job training. But there is one rule, and that's that there's no drugs or alcohol. You can't be on drugs and you can't drink while you're staying at their mission. And I brought Eric there. I drove him there in my car. He could have walked there easily or found a way to get there. I could have given him money to get there. Just a really quick, you know, one day asking people for money can get you enough for a bus ticket. Or, you know, I drove him there myself. He didn't want to stay. He couldn't give up the drugs. And at the end of the day, I finally looked at him. I was like, you just can't give up the drugs and the drinking. So you can't stay in a place like this. So there are places like this, but people don't want to be limited to the rules they have to adhere to in these places, stringent rules like no drugs. And so I think that there, you know, there is a difference, but it is, it's a burden. It goes back to the story of the enabling parents. I mean, when the government enables it, then nobody's ever going to want to find work and no one's ever going to want to get out of these situations.
Jennifer, did you stay in contact with that man after that, or was that it?
I didn't after that. I think because I confronted him because I always gave him food. Of course, I don't work at that Starbucks anymore. I worked there to save money to go to law school. But so I'm not even living in Atlanta. But after that, I mean, he stopped coming around. I think it was almost some of the shame because I wanted to help him. I took him to Target once, which is really funny to see little me with this, you know, tall homeless man walking around Target to get him some shoes. And I mean, he was a very nice man. And but I finally confronted him. I said, I took you to two places that offered you free room and board. And can you just be honest with me that you can't give up the drugs?
What did he say?
Oh, he said, well, you know, it's not as easy as that. I mean, there's always an excuse. There's always something. But after that, he stopped coming around my store.
Jennifer, did you know he was on drugs when you were doing that, when you were assisting?
No, I think it was just, yeah. And I think, I hate to say just, you know, with Betsy on the line. I think it was, you know, marijuana. It wasn't hard drugs. But I mean, it's still drugs. And that's their one rule. And, but I didn't know. I had a feeling, you know, you can always tell. And I mean, I've lived in these circles and I have some experience there. And so I kind of straight up asked him. I was like, Eric, you read the paperwork. There's one rule there. Is that the rule you can't follow? And it was always an excuse, always something, and said it wasn't that easy. And I was like, you know, you could have seen your family by now. And there's not.
Right. Can you take I don't know if you know the answer to this, Betsy, or not. I'm just curious if we know there's an answer to this, but I'm wondering, to the point of people who, like Jennifer tells the story about the drugs and, you know, they can't seem to help themselves kind of thing, or they don't want to help themselves, as you suggested just a bit ago here, which is what Linda was saying. I wonder what percentage of homeless people, back to the point of Jennifer making now, are truly in that position because of life conditions and some unfortunate things happen where they need a hand of some sort versus those who make the choice to be there. Do we have any idea what is it? 80-20, 90-10, 50-50, any idea?
It's about, and again, it depends on the state you're looking at and where you're looking at, but it's somewhere between 35% and 50% of homeless Americans are homeless by choice.
Hold on, 35% to 50% of the homeless people are by choice.
Homeless by choice.
Okay, so at least a third, you're saying, to maybe half.
At least a third. Okay. I think it's higher, and that's been my experience in law enforcement.
I see.
But of course, I have met people that were, because, you know, especially nowadays, you know, they say most Americans are, you know, can't come up with $500 for an emergency. And you know, the people that I met over the decades who were legitimately homeless, you know, a couple of bad decisions, a bad relationship, you know, a loss of a job, things like that.
Right.
The thing is there are many, many, many programs in place to help those people and get them back on their feet.
Right.
It's just that they, and Jennifer just said this, it's just that they have to follow rules.
Right.
And that, this is what we're seeing in California. And talk about this. This is what we're seeing in the Northeast. This is what we see in Chicago on Lower Wacker Drive, where they all live there. Yeah. They don't want to follow the rules. They don't want to not commit crime. They don't want to. And we see that here where I live in Tucson, Arizona. We have so many homeless because it's warm all the time. And our city in Tucson just can't get a handle on it. And exactly what you were talking about, there's all these gentrified neighborhoods, and yet people have got, you know, a $500,000 house, and they've got a little homeless encampment out front.
Wow.
And here's what's going to happen. I just got to say, we're going to have to start dealing with this problem with our pocketbooks. So, for example, I'm teaching an hour from Seattle in a couple months. So I was going to go in early, go to Seattle, spend a couple of days in the city, see a friend, run around. You know what? The fact that they have this nasty homeless mansion in the area that I was going to go to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fly into there and I'm going to get out of the city of Seattle and I'm not going to spend a dime there. And that's what we need to start doing.
Oh, I see.
You have to modify people's behavior. And that's the way that you're going to do it. And the other thing is that, you know, probably Betsy, you did this. We used to do this in Los Angeles and San Jose. the cities, this, and this is way back because now it's different, but when homeless people would be sleeping in parks and so forth, some of these cities made, they changed the park benches so that they're kind of the curved kind that you can't sleep on, and they just modified people's behavior so that they moved on. Now we're doing the opposite. Now we're enabling everybody, as Jennifer said. And I mean, I can tell you so many places that I travel to. Hawaii is one of them. On Oahu, on the northwest shore of Oahu, there is a beautiful, one of the most beautiful beaches you'll ever see. And it is miles of disgusting homeless tents and trash and feces and needles. And why? Because none of those people want to pay rent. These are not people that are homeless because they're, I'm sure that there's a few that are mentally ill, but these are people that choose this. And by the way, they're living in paradise on one of the most beautiful beaches, and Hawaii has been unable to get them off those beaches. So in Los Angeles, it's the same way. Now, Los Angeles has actually apportioned portions of the city streets to allow people that live in cars to stay on them. So your taxpayer dollars... And these people can stay, and they actually have a map that says, okay, here's the streets that you can sleep on. And in San Diego has, they're trying to crack down a little bit more in San Diego, which surprises me because it's really become a mess. But I think that they've realized the mess that they've allowed. And they're doing some enforcement there. So, and then in Venice, you know, you have a woman in a $500,000 condo who tries to report a homeless guy urinating on her building, and he punches her in the face. You know, it's just a problem, Malcolm, where so many of the people are homeless by choice anymore, and it's because we enable it. By the way, in Los Angeles, up by the 10 freeway, there's a whole entire area that young people, I mean, like, teenagers and early 20s and so forth, have built this huge homeless condo kind of thing out of, like Betsy said, or Jennifer said, about with boxes and, you know, all different, like, parts of things. Yeah, they've built one of those places, and it's like right next to the freeway so that you can see it when you drive by. It's probably using some of the structure of the freeway, and that's what they do. So these people are not mentally ill. They may be getting on drugs. I don't know. I'd assume that lifestyle would lend itself to, you know, meeting people that are on drugs and getting on drugs yourself.
What comes to my mind, a couple of things here, ladies. You're talking about enablers. What I try to say is, okay, how do we fix this problem? Your heart goes out to people who need it, and I think everybody here appreciates that. The question is, how do you define those people, friends? And that really is what it comes down to. This homeless thing really bothers me, the fact that we have so much of it. And I think it's going to be a bigger problem ahead. I don't have a good feeling about this. I haven't had a good feeling for a while now. But I see this as a future part of our country and the nation and the world, actually. And it's really bothersome. I don't know. It's a bad reflection of humanity, I guess. But I don't feel good about it, people. We need to come up with some answers and strategize. We'll do more of that in just a moment here.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
How would the judge feel if this truck was outside of her home? And I guess maybe you want to expand upon that, Betsy, but I'm sure the judge wouldn't like that. Quite frankly, I wouldn't like it, broken down trucks and cars around the property.
with people sleeping in and stuff. But then again, I don't like homelessness, period, which is why I would not visit San Francisco anymore. Or a lot of these cities in these urban areas that have gone to hell in a handbag, which really, to me, becomes a whole nother set of problems, ladies, because we're talking about a, I hate to say this, but it's the darn truth. It's a liberal doctrine that is out of control. You know, it's what it is. It's a liberal fantasy, ladies, that somehow these politicians and others think they're saving the world, you know? It's like taking in 25 lost cats at your house. At some point, you have a problem, Betsy, yeah?
Well, absolutely. One of the worst homeless problems we have in this country is in Washington, D.C. And all of those legislators who work there, what do they do at night when the homeless all come out and the city brings out the shower trailers to all the parks? I don't know if any of you guys have seen that, but they have a horrible problem. What do? They all go to Virginia and Maryland in their beautiful homes with their huge walls and their big locks. And that's exactly what happens in California and in Seattle and in Portland and in Chicago, everywhere else. They don't want to see it. They don't want to be around it. They don't want it in their neighborhood. But, we're supposed to be kind and compassionate and all that. And it's when we're dealing with the homeless problem in the United States, it's time to go back to some tough love. And this problem is always political. And I would challenge anyone to look at the worst homeless problems in the United States. And they're almost exclusively in liberal cities.
As I said, it's kind of a liberal doctrine. I hate to say that, Betsy, right. But it is. It's like, what do they gain by this?
Well, one of the things they gain is voters. You know, it's the same reason why we want the whole southern border. They want the whole southern border open because they're going to get more voters. Because now, understand, in the last 10 years, remember, homeless people couldn't vote. You couldn't vote if you didn't have an address. Well, now they're all given addresses, you know, whether it's a shelter or whatever, so that they can vote. And now all those people are going to be, and believe me, when it's time to vote, somebody's going to come to those homeless encampments.
On voting day, go to the encampments.
Yes, ma'am. Exactly. They're
going
to
watch how many trucks are there. Yep.
Yep. And there's going to be buses to bus them to the polls and all of that. And I don't know if the rest of you have seen this, but lately in the media and on social media, there's been lots of attacks on the Trump administration. What are you doing about the homeless Donald Trump? What are you doing? Nobody asked Barack Obama what he did about the homeless for 8 years. Right. What did he do? Not a damn thing.
No, we all have more homeless because of him.
Exactly. It's exactly.
But you know what? There are, and what's so interesting about that, because so much of my experience, and I know it's the same for Linda and especially for Betsy, but so much of my experience, I choose to get that because I know I'm younger than a lot of people in this field. I'm in my early 30s, and so I'm always wanting to see. I'm wanting to go firsthand. That's why I just traveled to the Middle East when I started studying the things that I studied there and spending time with the people there. But I've done the same thing, and almost as an offshoot, in places like Chicago. And I'll never forget one of my Chicago trips. I'm there downtown, and you just see the difference. I mean, I'm seeing it. I go to one of these encampments. I go to these people, and those are the very same people. I believe the Obama phone lady was in Chicago downtown, one of my favorites. And but then I call for an Uber ride. I get an Uber driver. It's an African-American from the inner city of Chicago. He's driving an Uber car. He's used the Uber system. They actually help you purchase a car, and they deduct the monthly payments from your paycheck so you can earn money while you're buying yourself a car, and then you can own it when you're done with it. He had done this. This guy unabashedly was a year and a half ago said, I want somebody like Donald Trump in the White House because Obama tried and he failed his city. This is his city. I'm trying to work for my family. I'm trying to work for my community. And I'm tired of the people who aren't. There are people like him everywhere. But those are the people. Those are exactly the people who are secretly supporters of more conservative policies.
Exactly.
Because they're tired of seeing their neighborhoods go to hell. And they actually do want to work.
Hmm. Yep.
Wow. Right. And the people that want to work, to your point, Malcolm, the people that are homeless that want to work, there are programs out there to get them working. What we're missing now is what we used to have is the mental health component. And that's a huge component of this, where when we started closing mental hospitals and so forth, and when we started not being able to admit people, just, you know, put them in there for 72 hours. It used to be that we could put them in there. Betsy, I'm sure that you remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
That we could put them in there for 72 hours, that we could get them some help. Now we can't do that. They started closing all the hospitals. So I don't remember if it was in, I think the 80s, maybe.
It was the 80s.
And now we don't have that resource, which is what we really need to get back. So what we had then that we don't have now, and I said this in my article, Malcolm, so I think that you missed this point, that I said I do feel for the people that are truly homeless because they have mental health problems and or they are truly in need. Those people are helpable, okay? But the people that are doing this in the numbers that we have now, many are doing it by choice, and it's honestly, it's dangerous. Look at the hepatitis outbreaks that we've had in many of these cities and many of these encampments. Look at the needles. Look at the children that are there. This, we need to modify behavior, and we need to do that by enforcing our laws and by making it uncomfortable for these people to be homeless that don't need to be homeless. The ones that truly need help, we absolutely need to help. I used to work in a mental hospital. I know what it is to be mentally ill. I've seen it firsthand, and we do need to help those people, and we do need to not let them be on the streets, because those people get hurt, they get raped, mm-hmm. they get beat up. Those are not things that we want to have. But this problem that okay. we have
All right.
is
Linda, let's talk about how to change this mindset a moment, because I look at the problem and I say, okay, how do we solve this problem now? Obviously, they're not focused on solving the problem, because as you pointed out, Betsy, what happens in Washington, D.C. with the entire group of politicians, they bring out the showers at night, they see all the homelessness, there's a massive amount of it in Washington, D.C., and then they all go to their big homes or their big lives or what have you. And then what's really even weirder about that conversation, Betsy, is then they get on the campaign, and then these people talk about the haves and have-nots.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, and they're the haves.
Well, they do it from a righteous standpoint, I'm suggesting to you, that, you know, they're like, they talk about, they don't, obviously, they're not fixing any of it, Betsy. They know it exists because it's right there. They're working. I mean, it's all over the place. And yet then they get on there and talk about it, but nothing is ever done, which really befuddles me why people are so messed up and why that nobody seems to be able to fix this problem. And I think you kind of hit the core of it a little bit early when you said you're not going to patronize that city, Betsy. What city was that again? You're in Seattle, was it? Seattle?
Seattle. We also had a trip planned to Portland, Oregon, who, you know, they have a huge homeless issue there, and their homeless are very aggressive. We canceled that trip. We're not going to spend our money in these areas. Here's the thing. Why is this? This is such a big problem, and the reason we're not getting a handle on it is part of it is because the problem is so big. So what do? You know, it's the old adage of how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And Linda brought this up, that there's children. We need to start, I believe, with two things. We need to start with the children mm-hmm. and the veterans. Mm-hmm. We have homeless veterans in every big city, and mm-hmm. we have it here in Tucson, Arizona, because we have a huge VA, and we have a lot of homeless veterans. Some are mentally ill, and some enjoy the lifestyle, and some really need the help. If we started with the veterans, because we already have the VA in place, as screwed up as it is, it's already a bureaucracy in place, and then we need to go with the children. I believe, and this may sound harsh to some, but if you go back 30 or 40 years in this country, we had what we called orphanages, mm-hmm. where we took children away from parents mm-hmm. who could no longer care for them. And you have, and Linda just brought this up, you have children in these areas, in these encampments, who are undoubtedly getting abused, who are getting sexually assaulted, who are probably not getting to school. Those children need to be removed from their parents, and if their parents really love them, then they will do what? They will do what they need to do to get their kids back. Make it uncomfortable for them, like Linda said. And I believe that's where we need to start to attacking this problem.
Wow. Wow. Well, there's so much that comes to the mind with this. It really is. And you say, Betsy, it's a big problem now. I got to tell you what, this problem is going to be a bigger problem just ahead. I see this thing growing. So when we say, how do we fix it? Well, here's the real dilemma I have. How do we determine, what about those who don't want to fix it? As you just said, Linda, earlier, that your whole premise is on that. You know, this guy who you kind of have read through the news doesn't seem to want to have a full-time job. He chooses to live in his truck, you're saying. See, that's the real caveat to this whole story here. He chooses. So for those who choose, and then they're being enabled by the communities, the cities, the towns, the states that are allowing this, right? So if one doesn't want to fix their life in that way, how do you force them to do this? How do you force them? What do you do, ladies? What do you do?
Well, the point to the article really had nothing to do with Stephen Long. The point to the article was the judge that ruled that him living in his truck was homesteaded. That is the problem. When she makes a ruling like that, you take away law enforcement's ability to give them the disincentive to stay anywhere, because we have laws that say that you can't park in one place for 72 hours. Well, now law enforcement is now hamstrung. They can't do anything. So that's the point of the article, is that we've opened up a huge can of worms here, where law enforcement can't do the things that will disincentivize people to stay in these places. They can't give them tickets. They can't tow their vehicle. So that's what the problem is.
So you're talking about the fact that the Homestead Act is that now wherever you live, in a box, a closet, a tent, a broom, or whatever, that's your home, right?
Well, that's
all right. Well, but let's talk about.
Go.
All right. Well, but listen, it really is their home, Linda. If you take the fact that you say home is where the heart is, we've all used that in our lives. I mean, let's be clear, it is their home, Linda. Wherever that place is their home.
Malcolm, that is not what the Homestead Act was, and you can't. We have to be a country of laws at some point. So if they choose to live on your front lawn, is that okay with you?
Listen, the point of homeless, let's break this down a minute. Homelessness, they're living somewhere. They're living in a tent. They're living in a truck. They're living in a broken down something. Whatever it is, that's their home. Let's be clear. It's their home. It's not about what I like or what I don't like. Keep that to the side a minute. It's their home. Does anybody dispute that? I mean, ladies, it's their home. Home is where you sleep, you live. I mean, call it what. So I have to disagree with you. I truly, respectfully disagree. I think the homestead thing, I think they're just doing what they think. No, I think there are other. And I disagree also if you're saying the Stephen Long isn't really what the discussion. I think it is about the Stephen Longs of the world. I don't think it's about the homestead thing. I think it's about the Stephen Longs and how do we fix the problem. Well, I'll tell you, I'm on the total opposite sides of this thing. I'll tell you. We'll be back in just a moment, friends.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, friends, we are solving homelessness today. Listen up. Knock it off. Sit down and listen up. We're going to solve the homelessness problem together here, okay? Linda Martinelli is here, and she thinks I'm on something today or whatever. I don't know what she thinks here, but... And again, Jennifer Breeden, Betsy Smith, we're all here, and we're talking here about this this guy who was living in a truck, Stephen Long. And, you know, I want to have this dispute with you to be able to solve the problem, okay, for real. But, and Betsy, let me go to you so you can dispute back with me, because you're a fighter, so let's talk a minute here, okay? I think this is their home. Argue that point with me, please, because you all had nothing to say when I said that. If the Homestead Act is Linda's problem, she says, with this thing, listen, your home is your home. We're not talking a house here. We're talking a home. A home is where you are. It's where you lay your head. It's where you sleep. It's where your heart is. It's whatever that means, Betsy, in your life. Could be a broom closet. I'm not talking about what it is. Does that make sense? Am I saying anything here? Or?
Well, you're to live in the United States of America, you have to follow the laws. For example, I own a motorhome like Linda, and we drive our motorhome around the country, but I can't just pull up in your driveway, Malcolm.
But
with
stop
my
there a minute now. But let's hold on. Let's talk about this. I hear you. But this judge ruled to the favor of Stephen Long.
That's
true. And we
think
the judge was wrong.
Well, yeah. I know you do, but he is following the law now because she just ruled in his favor.
Right. Okay. So two things with that. First of all, a judge is just one person who I believe, and Linda states this, that she incorrectly interpreted the law. So we have a system in the United States that now, the city of Seattle, if they choose to do that, can take it up to the next level. We'll see if that happens. In the meantime, Stephen Long gets to go apparently park wherever he wants. So now what happens? Now the people of Seattle have to decide, are we going to live this way in this city, or are we going to fight back? Are we going to go to City Hall? Are we going to complain? Right. What are we going to do?
Right.
And that's what people in America need to do. I can tell you right now in my home here in Arizona, I've got a front yard and then the city owns the sidewalk and all that. And if some homeless guy decided to pitch a tent on the city sidewalk in front of my home and the city said it was okay, we'd have a real problem and I would get involved politically.
Well, you're right. You either get involved politically,
life a living hell.
Or you move out of the city and you move out of the area, which is what you're saying. You're not going to visit those places. You're not going to go there. You're going to patronize them. But you see, I'm trying to get, we have this, Jennifer, I want to talk to you a moment here.
Okay.
We have this conversation all the time in this country about the haves and have-nots. People wear that around and they wear that in a very righteous way, just like the politicians do, okay? And we have all these people. Now, you're asking me, Linda would say, well, would you like that? Betsy would say, no, hell no, I wouldn't like it. Well, you have two choices. You either get involved in the system to fix the problem. You talk to the person like you did when you were at Starbucks, Jennifer. And then you find out the cat's on drugs. They don't care. They've done this by choice. Okay, then you got a problem. Then you need laws to fix the problem. Would I want the guy living in a truck outside? Absolutely not. I mean, did he have to be there because of his family or something else? Potentially. You see, we're not getting to the core of the problems. I think that is the problem. But again, I'm just trying to point, I'm not trying to be a total smartass here. I'm just trying to say, Jennifer, your home is your home. Don't tell me where your home is not. I mean, I don't care what it is. If it's in a car, a truck, a broom, it's your home is where you are. We knew that as kids. Home is where the heart is, Jennifer. Breeden, I don't think anybody can argue that. So there, we got all these people out there. What do we do?
Well, I'm going to say this, and on that note, I do agree with you that, home is where we make it. Now, there are some things that are going to make it hard because we want to find a solution for this. And I mean, we're talking about laws. This is very important. Judges that are ruling in different localities, what they think their interpretation of the law should be, thus creating new laws. So there are some different situations. Now, I'll just raise a couple ones that we've talked about in this conversation. One is the difference between somebody who is mentally stable, who just chooses to not follow the laws, who wants to live on the streets, who doesn't want to be bound to bills and rent payments.
Now stop there. That's one person, Jennifer. Hold on. Let's do this together. Now, what do we do with that person? Stay right there a minute with me. Don't go so fast. I want to talk about the person you just described. What do we do with that person, please?
Well, there's a sub factor of that person, okay? There's a person who owns a car that is his personal property, who owns a car and wants that car to be his home. And then there's one who doesn't own any personal property, who just is living on the streets, under bridges, things like that.
Exactly.
So for the one that owns a car, that's his personal property. That's what he owns. I believe he can make that a home if he wants to. The question comes down to how little do you respect the people in your fellow, in your town, in your
What do we do with the person? Now, back to following laws. The cats who don't follow laws, these homeless people, what are we supposed to do with them? And this is what I don't understand. We don't want them in the trucks and the broom closets and the whatevers. I get that. The tent cities, the highways. It's a mess. It's a sloppy mess. I get it. It's disruptive for the rest of us who give a rat's ass, who are trying. I get it. That's me. I'm with you cats. But what do we do with them? Do we shoot them in the head? Do we bury them? Do we
cream? The law.
What?
Enforce the laws that exist.
Then what do we do with the people?
There are shelters they can go to. There are welfare programs they can get involved in. There are work fairs.
So, Betsy, do we force them to go in there?
If they don't follow the law,
then what?
We take them to jail.
Jail.
Exactly.
All right. So, well, then that's so. Let's stop there now. A moment again. Now, let's hear what we're saying. So, that's what I'm asking. What do we do with the people? Say, take them to jail. So now, just be prepared. If that's what we're looking at here as a society. Your jails are going to explode. If we're going to take those homelessness people, let's be real here, ladies. You have these quick answers. Let's be sure we understand what you're saying. So you want to put the homelessness people then in jail, is what you're saying.
The ones that break the law, first and foremost, mm-hmm. we've got to start enforcing the law. So, right. for example, that homeless encampment in LA, right. they need to go in there, first of all, take care of the children, tear the damn thing down, get these displaced people to go somewhere. And remember, a lot of those people have places they can go. They have friends they can stay with. They have family members that they can reconcile with. Make it very uncomfortable for them to be homeless. Mm-hmm. Half of them will go away. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that want to stay on drugs and the ones that want to continue to be criminals, we arrest them, we prosecute them, they go to jail.
Wow.
To Betsy's point, too, even mm-hmm. government funding for some yeah. of these places. We talked about Mission Atlanta was the one. The Mission the Mission is a nonprofit organization. It's okay. nationwide. It's in every major city, I believe. Okay. It's just one of many, and I'm sure they're already getting some
programs.
Use the funds that are being used to give them steak and shrimp dinners to give to these programs, but also to pass legislation to say that we're going to mandate mm-hmm. that you not freeze to death or, you know, overheat or anything else or be mm-hmm. living in your trucks and causing disruptive chaos. Mm-hmm. Here's a room and bed over your head. We're going to enforce that. And if you don't stay here, then yes, we're going to have to send you to jail. If you are able to contribute to society and can't, because some of these places, the Mission is one of them, mm-hmm. Has job programs. There are employers that partner right. with them yeah, to
sure
take their candidates.
Sure there are.
I mean, my God, unemployment is so low that there are places that can't get enough people to do the jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we
Betsy,
need
when
to-
we talk about, let me ask you this too as well. I just want to make sure I check this box. When we talk about the jail, now, would there be special jails for these kind of people? Would they just be regular jail? What would it be? Because there'd be a lot of people that would end up there. Would we create a new kind of jail, like a homelessness? I don't know. What do we
create
call it?
Create a halfway house for homeless.
That's what I'm asking.
They already exist.
Like yeah, they do exist.
Things already exist.
All right, so that's what I'm asking.
Okay. Our right. bottom line problem here
okay.
is that all of these liberal jurisdictions
right.
have allowed the homelessness to thrive.
Right,
they have
right,
made it
right.
too comfortable. They have made right. it, frankly, desirable
right.
for a segment of the population to do this.
Yeah.
So we've got to go back to making it shameful
right.
and uncomfortable
yeah, yeah.
to
right.
be home.
Exactly. And when you take the homeless encampment by Anaheim Stadium in Orange County, California,
yeah.
and they started clearing that out, Malcolm, we've already talked about this. The first day they had thousands of needles. They had tons of feces and waste. They had, you know, that's where they had a hepatitis breakout and so forth. So these are health hazards for everybody else.
Sure,
and it's
sure.
not just the homeless people that have rights. It's all of us also have rights. We have the right to not have those situations near us and have our health affected by it. So these people, a lot of them were given vouchers to go to hotels.
Yes.
And stay a
right.
much better environment than they were living in, and they chose not to.
But I see this as a breakdown of society. The fabric of society is falling apart as we speak. And the decisions that are being made right now in the Californians and the cities that you point out, Betsy, the Seattles and all of these cities, Tucson and all of these places you're talking about where homelessness is getting out of control, Washington, D.C., and so many other places, Betsy, these places are going to be the camps of the future, that society is so broken down, nobody's going to visit there. They're not going to spend their money. They're not going to be there. They're not going to engage. And so we're going to have a whole nother look of this fabric of society that is going to be beyond the haves. So I think everybody better prepare for it now. Unless we're able to reverse the doctrine that has been put in place by these people who are either seeking power for the votes or they just are totally so disenfranchised against the human race that they really don't care anymore. I think we got some real problems on our hands. Speak to that, please, what I say to you, please. Jennifer, speak to that first, please. What do you say to that?
I say it's a very distinct possibility. I mean, here we have, you're saying we're going towards a very dangerous place. Now, when I look at numbers, these are just facts and figures, statistics. Statistically, people that work hard, that have worked hard all their life, that believe in hard work, that make an income, it doesn't matter how high that income is. A lot of times that income is just at the medium line or even maybe slightly below or even a poverty line, but they're still able to put food on the table, provide for their families, have a home over their head. These are the people, these are the ones that tend to vote conservative. They tend to vote conservative. They've done that over the years. And so we look at those. I would consider those actually more of the have-nots and the people who they have enough to provide for themselves, but they haven't had handouts. They don't want handouts. They don't research handouts. And then I would even look at some of the homeless aspects, these cities that we've discussed where they can have anything they want. They never have to work a day in their life. I would put them in with the haves. I know it's a totally different way of defining this, but I mean, these are the ones you look at the loudest, voices for liberal politics, the ones that are most vehemently against conservatives, and it's either Hollywood or illegals or the homeless population that they might get out there. We're going to vote for whomever allows us to have a life where we never have to work or ever be or anything like that. We're always going to get, you know, what we need without having to work for it. And so I think that that is dangerous when you start to create a society when your entire verbiage, when all your financing is going to make people believe that only this political party is going to help you maintain a life where you never have to work for it. Therefore, you don't care about laws.
Well, Jennifer, that's what the Democratic Party has built a whole living on. That I mean, they've done that to the Black American community like there's no tomorrow. I mean, they have. You know, again, a lot of my friends, like C.L. Bryant, as one who did the movie The Runaway Slave, and Herman Cain. I mean, they talk about the government today being the plantation. For a lot of these ethnic groups, quite frankly, I mean, they're very vivid in their descriptions here. I don't have to, you know, I mean, that's what they talk about. But that's what they've done is enable all of these groups in such a vivid, unbelievable way. I don't think anybody should have to put up with people living in cars and tents and things. And I wouldn't live in California and many of those cities just on that basis alone. It freaks me out when you have to step over people and there's people. I mean, this is beyond sad. It's ridiculous. And then to break that down, Betsy, to say, okay, how many have to be here because of real problems? And then we need to put them somewhere. But this is a failure of government. This is a total, total, total failure of what government is supposed to do. This is sick. This is disgusting. This is over the top. I mean, this needs to be stopped, I got to tell you. And Betsy, you have the right idea, is to boycott all those places. You know, now maybe that will take a movement. But again, this is where we're headed, Betsy. What the picture I painted earlier, is there any truth? Do you see that picture of what I'm describing here? Or?
Well, yeah, I absolutely do. And here's the problem with conservatives is none of our conservative politicians have the balls to stand up and say, this is wrong. Right. This is disgusting. People who work hard to have their homes shouldn't have to deal with these people. Conservatives are so, not conservatives like us, conservative politicians are so incredibly gutless.
I think you're using the wrong word. They're not conservative politicians. I disagree with you. They're not that, Betsy. Hold on. They're Republicans, Betsy. There's a difference.
Exactly.
Use the word Republicans and say what you were saying. Go ahead.
And they are, and Republican politicians are so gutless.
Gutless.
Because, you know, for 15, 20 years, we've been called, you know, we're not compassionate. We don't care about people. We don't care about children. We don't care about the downtrodden, all that. And no Republican and has the balls to stand up and say, hold on a minute, that we are the compassionate, but we have compassion for everyone. And you're right. And in my small world of law enforcement, Malcolm, what you describe, these areas that you describe that are going to turn into ultimately no-go zones for the rest of the public,
zones. There you go.
Who's going to have to go? Me, law enforcement, my brothers and sisters are going to have to go into those places. And it's going to, we just had an officer involved shooting in Portland, Oregon, where a homeless guy got a car, took the police on a chase, got a knife, went into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in another homeless shelter, and the Portland police had to go in and kill him because he was trying to kill other people. And now they're in uproar, not because he was trying to kill people, but because the Portland police killed a homeless guy. Yeah, a homeless guy who was trying to murder others.
Betsy,
I don't think this is where we're headed.
I don't think the police are eventually going to go there. I think they're going to become lawless. These are going to be lawless in these places.
I think there'll be a choice because we are not London.
I think it's going to change, Betsy, eventually. I think it's going to change. I think it is. I think a lot of law enforcement, I think the price they've had to pay and the way they've paid with their lives and the disrespect and everything going on there, I think you're going to have less and less recruits. I think the law, I'm going to tell you right now, Betsy, I think the high pride of law enforcement in this country, I think it is, I think it's a profession that is changed. It has been changed dramatically in the past 10 years, Betsy, in the past few years.
The liberals are trying to change us, but the hearts and minds of my brothers and sisters in blue out there are not changing.
Well, I think there's not going to be a choice at some point. There's going to be a tipping point, Betsy, a tipping point. And the tipping point is too many are dying, too many are giving up their lives, too much is going on, and the women are not going to want their husbands, and the husbands are not going to want their wives out there fighting that fight because it's a problem. It's a problem. You know, I don't know. The whole conversation makes you sick. Linda Martinelli, you started this. Why don't you finish?
I did. we're in a society of people that just don't have to be accountable for anything anymore. And we just have to go back to, we need to be a society of laws. We need to bring back some mental health care for people, get our churches more involved. We have the resources out there, and stop allowing these people to take advantage with the bleeding hearts. It's just not going to work. We have to be accountable to the majority of people that are good law-abiding citizens and stop catering to these people that are not.
All right. Well, listen.
And stop legislating from the bench.
All right. So
absolutely.
My goal today was to get all of you out there to think. I wanted you really to think about this problem here. You know, that was my goal. My single goal, was to really think about this. And I wanted to look at it from all sides. You know, one of the things I always try to do with my conversations and on this platform is to really take the problem, isolate the problem, and then really try to find some fixes for the problem, which is why one of my goals is to have a national think tank where we can solve some of the big problems of the day and bring the right voices, because our politicians are simply not doing the job, friends. And that's a problem I'm seeing out there, you know. So I want to suggest to you that I think it's time we're going to have to step up. We're going to have to take it back. It starts with us. I mean, that's where it starts. I want to encourage you all to look at this problem. Homelessness is sick. What's going on out there is so bad. And, I mean, we're talking about it more and more and more now. When Linda wrote this column, Coming Soon to Your Neighborhood, at first I thought, okay, what about Stephen Long? Is he a man who is part of which group? Is he a part, is he a part of the group that is being enabled? Is he part of the group that really has some life struggles that he needs a hand? But again, there are programs and things for this. Really interesting conversation today. Friends, we'll leave it there. We won't solve all the problems, but we're certainly going to get you to think about them, and that's the goal here. Sergeant Betsy Smith, Jennifer Breeden, Linda Martinelli. This is Malcolm Out Loud, to be continued, friends.